Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Tony Rude and Son, Sports Radio.
Welcome back to The Fan. Lori Rubenson here with you. And, of course, this was Masters weekend, Sunday at Augusta. And really some history made as Hideki Matsuyama became the first man from Japan to ever win a major tournament, and certainly, therefore, the first to win a Masters and the green jacket. And to talk about the Masters and the history that was made, we bring in Mark Canizzaro from the New York Post, the author of 7 Days in Augusta, a book about the Masters, and Mark down there covering the tournament. Hey, Mark, how are you?
I'm doing great, Laurie. How you doing?
I'm doing well. You know, history is often made at the Masters, but this year, certainly no different. How significant is this champion, and how much pressure was on him, the weight of all of that, knowing the significance of what it meant to his home country of Japan?
Well, I absolutely think this is one of the most difficult final rounds. And listen, all of these things are difficult to try to close the deals on these major championships, but you know, he had the weight of a nation on him, and it's hard for us to understand because, you know, we treat our athletes differently in our sports. We view them maybe differently than some other countries do. They worship their athletes, you know, their guys, like, you know, nationally. But, you know, we're a little bit more, you know, kind of locally oriented, if you will. You know, we're about the Yankees and the Mets and the Giants and the Jets here, et cetera. It's a little bit more national over in Japan, and there's been a lot of pressure on you know, the handful of really good Japanese golfers, men golfers, that have been out there. There have been two women that have won majors, but no man has ever won a major championship. And the Japanese are golf crazed, and to not have a major championship, you know, it was something was building over the years. And Matsuyama is a guy that's, you know, not just turned up. I mean, this guy was the low amateur at the Masters 10 years ago. And he's had, you know, he's got a pretty damn good resume. He's got, you know, now he has 6 victories. He had 5 victories, some very big ones, you know, World Golf Championship events and whatnot. But he had not really, and he'd also, he competed well in major championships. Before today, he had finished in the top six of all 4 major championships in his career at least once. So this is a guy that's, you know, clearly was talented enough to do it. But when he woke up with a 4-shot lead this morning, I would suggest to say that there hasn't been, maybe not been a major championship winner, or a Masters winner, I should say, that maybe was under more pressure going into a final round than he was. And he looked pretty shaky early, and he held it together.
Yeah. Are you there?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I just wasn't sure if you were continuing. So he did look shaky early. He also honestly looked shaky late. I thought there was about 5 minutes worth of excitement before Xander Schauffele put a, you know, put a ball into the drink on the par three there. And I thought we were going to have an interesting tournament there. And then suddenly it was more of a runaway. So, and then he only ends up winning by the one shot, but he had enough of a lead there padding it. But afterwards, I confess, you know, I was watching the tournament. I flipped to hockey and the NBA and was, you know, flipping around to other things that I had to, you know, tune into after the Masters. I didn't see the post-tournament, you know, interviews and things like that. How emotional was he? It looked, I was watching him walk off the course on 18 and some other, you know, Jordan Spieth and players who were waiting there to greet him. And it did look like there were tears, there was emotion there.
No, you know what, Lori? He looked a little dazed to me. You know, he looked a little lost, I thought, coming off 18. And part of that, and listen, I mean, there's so much things going on in your mind at a moment like that. You know, he didn't have his family with him. His wife and his child were back in Japan. You know, so often we see these guys, you know, come off 18 and their families, you know, the wife and the kids jump into their arms. And he didn't really have that. You know, he had his team, his interpreter, and his coach, and his caddy, and whatnot. But you're right. He never really, even in the post-match press conference, it didn't really, you kind of were waiting for him to break down. You know, it's interesting because last year with Dustin Johnson, in November, you know, the last Masters, he's the last guy we would ever have thought we'd have seen tears from. And I think you and I probably talked that night.
Yep.
And that was eye-opening, you know, to see how emotional he got. He really got choked up on, you know, in the ceremony afterwards. I feel like maybe it didn't quite set in, maybe, for Hideki, because, you know, the magnitude of it all. He also didn't have his family there. You know, it's interesting. On Saturday night, last night, he was asked a few times about that pressure on Japan and, you know, there's also, and I wrote about this in my column for tomorrow's, you know, post, or I guess it's today's post. There, at every single tournament, Lori, that I cover, and with not just like every single tournament that Matsuyama is at, there is a throng of Japanese media, you know, photographers, reporters. It's not unlike, you know, when the Yankees, you know, had, you know, the Japanese players, you know. Mm-hmm. In the MLB, there's always a gigantic, you know, throng of Japanese media, and that's how much they worship their sports there. And Hideki is a very, very private, low-key, almost shy guy, and he does not embrace that, you know. And he admitted last night that he felt more at ease because of the fact that there was less Japanese media here this week because of COVID. Many, many less credentials were distributed, so it was a very, very scaled down media contingent here, and I really think that helped them today, you know, to be honest with you, not having that usual, you know, huge group of media having to do all these obligations after he does the main press conference and he's going to sit with these people and that people, and they're probing and they want to know about his private life and things like that. And I think that stuff really, you know, is something that he really detests. And I think it's ironic that, you know, he's probably brought more, even not probably, he has brought more attention to himself than he ever, ever has before by winning, you know, as I kind of said in my column, it's the price of a green jacket, you know, you're right. He didn't show a lot of emotion, but I think he really, I think he was just trying to digest what happened to him because this was the magnitude of this was pretty, pretty significant, you know, not just for him personally, but just, you know, for his nation.
Yeah. Look, we say this all the time, but certainly, yeah, his life will never be the same. He will always be the one who got it done. And a lot of times, just in terms of how he got this done, how he got the lead and established himself, this was a strange tournament in that a lot of people, you know, forget Tiger and the car accident and all of that, but a lot of people didn't make the cut. Then we had the, you know, Saturday we think of as moving day. And Saturday is when things tend to happen and people make a move at a major tournament. And here we had the, you know, the weather delay, the, you know, rain or you know, lightning, whatever that was, delay on Saturday, and the rain delay, and we come back and some of the world's top players, whether it was Justin Thomas and others, just not handling how this deluge of rain had changed the course. What was it about Hideki Matsuyama that made him just so effortlessly handle the changing conditions like that? Because I felt like that was the tournament right there.
Oh, that's where he won the tournament. There's no question. I mean, listen, he won it today, but I mean, he set himself up to win that golf tournament yesterday in that, you know, those last, you know, 7.5 holes. You know, he was on 11 when the weather delay came. You know, Hideki is a very aggressive player, Laurie, and he knows that a lot of pins. And that sometimes is not conducive to success at Augusta because there are so many, you know, the margins are so narrow, you know, with the trouble, with the way the greens are contoured and how fast they are and whatnot. And everything had been really fast all week. And then that rain came, and it wasn't a ton of rain, but it was just enough, you know, to soften things up and make the greens a little more receptive. And Hideki seemed to be the only one, that suited his aggressiveness. And B, he seemed to be the only one that really adjusted to the greens that were maybe a foot or a foot and a half slower than they had been before the rain. You know, Justin Thomas referred to it. He said, look, I had plenty of time to adjust to it, and I just didn't do it. You know, so, you know, it's funny. It was a moving day, but only one guy moved. It was Hideki. And really, he set himself up, you know, for what unfolded today. You know, and he needed every bit of that cushion. Because he admitted afterwards, he said, I wasn't just nervous in the back nine. I was nervous from the start and right to the last putt went in. And he certainly looked like the guy that, you know, certainly in those last couple of holes, even after Xander messed up on 16, that he had two hands on the bus wheel just trying to, you know, bring it back to the barn, you know. You're right, though. You know what? It's a shame that Xander puts that ball in the water on 16 because if he doesn't, that has, you know, this has a chance to be an epic finish, you know, and maybe even playoff or something like that, because he was smoking hot, and he's a guy that's not afraid, you know, which I mean, Xander, I really thought was the one guy that was going to come out of the pack today, and I thought he was going to win, I really did. I really, and I wrote about him twice, massively impressed with this Will Zalatoris, 24 years old. I mean, he was as much a story of this golf tournament, in my opinion, as Hideki was, you know, right to the end.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that. For people who didn't follow it, so Will Zalatoris ended up one shot back, came in second, 20, you know, as Mark is saying, 24 years old. And for people who didn't follow this, you wrote a story about him and his connection to, you know, quarterback announcer Tony Romo. What can people expect from Will Zalatoris, who, and also, by the way, if you didn't see this, is I would say I'm not a particularly large person. I think he and I probably weigh the same. He just looks very skinny for a man, and yet out there just belting the ball.
Well, first of all, he's got a 28 waist, I believe. And I don't know if that's true, but I heard that. That's something I wanted to ask.
I think he and I can wear the same jeans.
But I will tell you this. I don't think I've been a 28 waist since I was in the womb, okay? So that's, you know. But it's funny. He's like a signpost. He's so skinny. And he hits the bejesus out of the ball. I mean, he's long. You know, he was playing in the first two rounds of Bernard Langer, which is, you know, such a cool, and I know you like golf. It's a cool thing about the sport where you got a 24-year-old and a 63-year-old, and the 24-year-old is hitting 9 irons to a par 3-6 hole, and Bernard Langer, who's got multiple green jackets,
is hitting
like 5 and 6 irons.
Yeah, okay.
You know, it's just incredible, and so... He really hits the ball, and I, you know, Tony Romo is a very accomplished golfer. Other than being, you know, having been a really good quarterback and an excellent broadcaster, he, you know, he's played in some tour events on some invites, and he's a legitimate golfer. And he said he has not seen anybody that takes a front seat in front of Zalatoris as a ball striker. I mean, this guy creams the ball, and you just watched him today. I mean, he didn't go away. You know, I mean, he was right to the end. I mean, you know, he kept the pressure on. And I just, listen, golf is so mental as much as it is physical. Most of these guys can hit the ball a long ways, and they're great ball strikers, and putting certainly separates them. But the mind, to me, Laurie, is really what separates the player the most. And this guy, I'm telling you, first Masters, second major as a pro. See, by the way, he finished T6 at Wingfoot in September at the U.S. Open, his first pro major. So when you listen to this guy talk, it's not, he's got this incredibly perfect blend. He's confident, but he's not cocky. And he literally speaks and acts like a guy that knows he belongs. So I don't think he's going anywhere. I mean, obviously this will boost his profile and his PGA Tour status and whatnot immeasurably. And he's not going backward. He's going forward. And I think he's going to be one of the stars in the game. I really do. I mean, I think he's going to be up there with the Spieths, you know, these young guys that are, you know, obviously taking the game over. He grew up playing with Spieth too, you know, a ton down in Texas. So, yeah, just seems to have an it factor to me. And when I talked to Tony Romo, who I think has a pretty good eye for an it factor because he had it as a, you know, really in both of his professions, I think this guy Zalatoris is going to be around, and he's going to be winning some tournaments soon and winning majors. I mean, I know this is not a knee-jerk thing. I wrote this like early in the week before anything was going on, certainly before he was in the position he was in today. So I think he's a fun guy to watch. He's a really very refreshing guy to speak to. Not a deer in the headlights. Absolutely a guy who feels like he belongs, but not cocky about it.
Yeah, it looks like the next great young American golfer, Will Zalatoris. And so one question I've never asked you about the Masters, which one is your favorite hole and why?
I love 12. It's the design of 12, which is, you know, for our listeners, don't know, it's a par 3, you know, in the middle of Amen Corner, the three-hole Amen Corner stretch, which is 11, 12, 13. You know, the green is angled in a way. It's a dastardly hole because it tempts you to go for the flag. Most of the really good players, if you ask them, they say, I just want to get on the green and give myself a good putt. But it tempts you. If you remember, you know, last year, I mean, 2 years ago when Tiger won in 2019, the 12th hole decided the entire golf tournament. You know, Tiger just, you know, went for the fat of the green. And everybody else that was, you know, was up there, including Molinari, who was leading at the time, put the ball in the water because they tried to be too precise. But the green is on a very kind of awkward angle. It's kind of this amoeba-sized green and a shaped green, I should say. And it's on a weird angle, and it's intimidating to look. And the winds swirl back there in that part of the golf course. So, I think, to me, that is probably my favorite. Unfortunately, the par fives in the back, you know, 13 and 15, they're almost becoming obsolete because these guys are so long.
Yeah.
I mean, guys are hitting wedges in, nine irons and wedges in to 13, which is, should not, it's too much, you know. So, yeah, I think 12 to me is just a tremendous strategic hole. And, you got a great chance of making a two or a three and just as good of a chance of making a five or a six.
All right. Before I let you go, last one. Sam Darnold, the Jets trade him to the Carolina Panthers. Do you like the trade for the Jets, for the Panthers, and for Sam Darnold?
Well, let's start with Sam. I think it's great for Sam. I think it was best for him to get out of Dodge. Personally, I would have liked to see the Jets give Sam one more go with this new coaching staff, you know, with LaFleur's, you know, Shanahan offensive system, and with some talent around him that they've started to bring in, and hopefully will bring in more with the draft. I would have liked to see them give him one more shot, but it's clear, you know, Joe Douglas has seen enough, and I really don't know who had the most influence on that, because certainly, you know, Robert Saleh was saying all the right things about Sam, which he had to, you know, when he was brought in. I think in terms of what the Jets got for Sam, I think it was a decent deal for both teams because, you know, there were some reports out there from some GMs that were saying that nobody would even give a second round pick for him. They were talking about maybe having to get a third and a couple of other things, which was pretty bad. And so I would have liked to that second rounder have been this year, much more preferred that. to accelerate the building process, but they do get one next year, and I guess the four, if I'm not mistaken, and then they get the sixth round of this year, which is, you know, whatever, you know. But, yeah, I'm not crazy about it because for this reason. I don't really trust who the Jets are going to pick at two. I have nothing against Zach Wilson, Laurie, but, I mean, the guy had one good season in college, mm-hmm. and it wasn't against elite competition. And I hope I'm wrong for Jet fans' sake, but I get so weary at this time of year when all of these quarterbacks, you know, the top quarterbacks in the draft, they get into the hype machine, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden everybody's salivating over them by the third week of April, and they, you know what I mean? And it looks like it's going to be four, you know, quarterbacks 1, 2, 3, and 4, the way things are looking right mm-hmm. now. And, you know, one of those quarterbacks, maybe two at best, are probably going to work out. And I think it's, you know, Joe Douglas is putting all his eggs in the Zach Wilson basket right now because, you know, I just think that, you know, I would have liked to have seen give Sam one more run this year with some talent around him. And you know what? If he stinks, then you move on next year, but you've built your team around, you know, the next quarterback. But they seem to have a conviction, you know, and you know, if they do, go get their guy. But I'm skeptical. Color me skeptical. I don't know. I just, you know, one good season in college. How many times have we seen this now? You know? Mark Sanchez, you know, I like a lot, and I think the Jets misused, but he had one good season in college. I mean, you know, you could go down the line with some of these quarterbacks, and I just, these teams, they get sucked up in the hype machine, and, you know, they're tripping over each other to get to the next quarterback, and I'm not sure I trust it. You can't tell me that any of those quarterbacks, except maybe Trevor Lawrence, is going to be better next year than Sam Darnold's going to be.
Conviction. You said the magic word. As far as I'm concerned, it's the one I use all the time. If you're drafting high in the first round, and in particular, if you're drafting a quarterback in the first round, high in the first round, you have to have conviction. If you have it, you pull the Ernie Accorsi, you do what you have to do, and you get that quarterback if you have conviction. And if you don't have it, then you trade down for all you're worth and reload and build depth on your team. But if you have it, you're not going to often always find yourself in a top two type of situation in a draft that a lot of people think is a strong quarterback draft. It's not going to happen a lot. So if you have it, you go for it. But that conviction word, and that is where careers for general managers are, you know, that's the make or break. Is not too many franchises allow a team to do what the Bears are doing with Ryan Pace, where you get it wrong and you get to keep going.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It's just, listen, conviction doesn't mean it's the right move. So we'll see how it goes. And, you know, I hope for Joe's sake and for the Jet fans' sake, deserve a winner at some point between the next, you know, now and the next 50 years. you know, hopefully he's right.
Safe travels home. The book, if you're into the Masters, 7 Days in Augusta by Mark Canizzaro. That's the book. Check it out. Mark, always appreciate the time. Catch up with you soon.
Okay, good talking to you, Laurie.
All right, 12:44, break.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.